If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I am joined by Ife Gardine. I can't even say an elder in our village because she runs around this city like it's nobody's business. Thank you so much for your time.
I'm glad to be here in conversation.
There you go. So tell me a little bit about, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Dixville and Newhallville. My grandparents lived on Reed Street, spent a lot of time over there, went to Ivy Street School. We lived on Winter Street off of Gaw Street, right behind the Elks Club, in the middle of it. So it was like all one neighborhood pretty much. Just go up Shelton Avenue and there was so much up and down and around. I feel like I grew up in a good time in New Haven.
We got latchkey kids in one generation, but your generation got to roam the streets.
Yeah, we did. And we was kind of latchkey too. You know, because my mother was a working mother and went to secretarial school. So, you know, my brothers and I had to be in before she got home from work. And I had to, you know, make dinner, do all that kind of stuff. Make sure everything was right. My uncle owned Unique Boutique. So when I was probably about 12 or 13, I started working for him.
Well, let's go back a little bit. Let's go back a little bit and talk about your mother. What is her name?
My mother's name was Elnora. She worked for the Board of Ed for many years.
Oh, what type of woman was she?
I want to say a single mom, but we had so much family that I did not, until I got to be an adult, I didn't realize the stress of being raised by a single mom, because we had a village. We had my mother was one of nine, and we had cousins and cousins and cousins. I don't know if everybody knows this, but my family, the Huckabees, my grandfather and his brother, my grandfather's older brother, came up here to New Haven during World War I when the gun factory had started hiring black people because all the white men went to war. And so all these black men came up in droves. This was our transition,
They call it a migration. Yes.
The migration. So all the white men were going to war. All these factories in Connecticut, like Winchester, Armstrong, Sikorsky, Pratt, all white guys were going to war. So black men were coming up from the South to work. My grandfather's older brother came up from Macon, Georgia, started working at Winchester, and met my grandmother's older sister, who had come up from Fayetteville, North Carolina. And they had a place, they had a house on either Gough Street or Orchard Street. I can't remember which one they told me, but either Gough Street or Orchard Street. And they started sending for their siblings. So the story is that my grandmother literally, she came up first, her and her sister, and she was staying with her sister. And then she was going to work one day, and my grandmother had gone to Fayetteville Teachers College, which is now Fayetteville State. So she had a degree, but she couldn't teach when she came up here. Right. So she worked at the hospital. She worked at the hospital. I know she worked at the hospital, and she was going to work. She was on the corner of Orchard and Gough on her way to work, waiting for the bus. And my grandfather got off a bus going the opposite way on the other side of the street and crossed the street. And he asked her if she knew where the Huckabee house is. She was like, "That's my sister." He said, "That's my brother." So about 3 months later, guess who got married? and one set of Huckabees had eight kids, and my grandparents had nine kids. That's how come, all their kids were first generation New Haven. And by the time they got married, public housing was built. So, well, not by the time they got married, they had three kids. Because my uncle that was just before my mother, because my mother was the middle child, she was fifth. My uncle that was born just before my mother, my uncle Elmer, he was the first child born in the projects. I got the newspaper article for receipts if anybody want to know. Because my grandmother saved everything. But there's a picture of her in the New Haven Register. Because Winchester had built the homes and they built the school. They built the homes for the people working there to get the work, and they also had built the school, Winchester School.
And before we continue, that's why you have so many Huckabees, and the Huckabees last name is spelled differently depending on who you ask. You got the E-E-E-Y.
Right. So this is what happened, because their all origin is from Macon, Georgia. So back then, and my grandfather's family was sharecroppers. And back then, when you told the foreman or whoever your name, they wrote it how they thought it should be. They didn't ask you how to spell your name. So my branch of Huckabee's is Huckaby. But I have cousins that are B-E-Y, B-E, or B-E-E. But again, it's like when people migrated from other countries and they landed on what's that island in New York?
Yep.
And they gave a name, and because the colonizers can't say your name,
they wrote it however they needed.
They wrote it, or they gave you just another name that they can pronounce.
And they call you John.
I mean, even now when I say Ife to people, it's two syllables. My birth name is Michelle. I added Ife to my name 36 years ago when I was pregnant with my daughter. I was looking for a name, and Ife came across several dialects in West African countries, right? Mm-hmm. And in Nigeria, there was a center that it was called Ile Ife, and it was a center for arts and culture and humanities. So I added it to my birth name and became Ife 36 years ago because that's how I wanted to live.
But and no one still writes it right.
Huh?
And they still get it wrong.
And then people still, if I say Ife, they're like, what, Effie? Effie? But if I say Michelle, two syllables again, they'll say, oh.
Oh, yeah.
But if I say Ife, it's like they heard something different. And it's I don't take it personally anymore, but there are, you know, and I've met people that are from other countries that'll say, oh, call me Jack or call me this or call me that. And it's like, what is your damn name? Excuse my language, but what's your name?
Take pride in it.
And make, you know, the pronunciation of names from the continent mean something.
Let's go back to your mom.
Okay, my mother. I got all off track.
No. That's my job. My job is to keep it on the rails.
Okay.
You're listening to 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. This is Ife Gardine, okay? I'm Jose Candelario, and we're having a discussion about mom, the middle of nine, number five.
Number five, the middle child of nine. My grandfather nicknamed her Babes. He said because she was always screaming the loudest. Probably because she had four in front of her and four behind her.
The middle child syndrome. Literally.
Probably. But yeah, she worked for the Board of Ed. She was my brothers played Pop Warner and Walter Pop Smith, and she was a teen mom, did all the things. She was really strict on me, more than my brothers, I think. I went to dance school. I loved going to Bowen Peters. And she was also named after my mother. Her birth name is Elnora. She was named after her aunt, my grandmother's sister, who was one of the first black businesswomen in this city, Elnora Bess. And she had a millinery shop on the corner of Orchard and Edgewood. The house is still there. In the front of it, every time I look in it, like back in the day, you would see her like her hats and dresses and things that she made, because my grandmother, her sisters all quilted. And my mother also sewed. She didn't keep it up though, like my grandmother and her sisters. And I regret that I never learned, you know, because they made some quilts. I still got a couple of my grandmother's quilts.
Hey, those things last forever.
Yep.
That quality of the material ain't the same no more. Mm-hmm. What is one thing that you carry around? Because you say your mom was a very strong woman, you know, did her best, but you didn't. Our parents did such a good job of hiding poverty or the difficulties in life from us.
That's something that, again, until I was like an adult and reflecting back on things, that I didn't realize, because we had such a big family, and we got together a lot. You know,
you still do. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we still do. But my mother and her brothers and sisters that remained here, and even the ones that had moved away, they got together a lot. My grandparents were a big part of our lives. On my father's side, my grandmother Hattie Turner was very involved in community, as was my grandmother Huckabee, and I was their first grandchild, so I got to spend a lot of time with both of them while my mother was working, or because she went to secretarial school. At that time, they had these secretarial schools. And so I guess I had a lot of responsibility as the oldest. Make sure my brothers did their chores. If they didn't, I got it in addition to them. They don't remember that. Like, I was like, Mom, we got to do this before Mommy get home. And one of my brothers just didn't care. And the other one be like, okay, but wait till the last minute. Like, he had to see her, like, getting off the bus and coming up the street or pulling up when she got a car. I was like, man. But yeah, I didn't feel lack of anything because of the resources within our family, you know, and spending, like, I was always babysitting for my cousins or somebody, or spending the night. We got summers. There was, like, we went to camp. There was always a camp. There was an overnight camp we went to. I hated it. I didn't like sleeping outside. I'm more of a glamping girl. when my mother was working, one of her bosses was head of the Jewish Center in the 60s, and so he gave us a scholarship to go to Jewish Center camp. So my brothers and I experienced being the only black kids at a Jewish camp, and it was like we were superstars or something. Like, that's at least my experience with it. They were always inviting me, the girls, that I, because I was older, but they would always invite me over. I went to bat mitzvahs. I went to people's house on the weekends, had their swimming pools and, you know, things. I don't know. I really didn't feel that I was lacking anything. You know, I didn't always get what I wanted, but I got what I needed.
It goes a long way. You have a history now of very strong black women. Dictating your character. What's one thing that you hear in the back of your mind when you face a challenge in your life, or, you know, came across something difficult? What stuck with you throughout your childhood that got you through?
Well, one experience I had, there was a program in New Haven in the 60s called Project Concern. I don't know what they was concerned about, but
she's doing air quotes and rolling her eyes just to give you a visual.
So, And it was one of those integration programs. So the children that I guess tested well were bused to other schools. So there were Catholic schools that were all that were segregated and schools out in different Hamden, Milford, Wallingford, all these places. So they want to do the kids in New Haven a favor and bust them out to these schools. Okay. So my younger brother and I got selected to go to this Catholic school that was on, it's called St. Boniface. The church is still standing on the corner of State and Grove Street and between Audubon and Grove. And there's these new apartments over there now. And it used to be the phone company after a while. But way before all of that happened, it was the school, a convent, and a schoolyard, and the church. So, and I was going into middle school, so I wanted to go to Sheridan or Troop with my cousins, because I had cousins that lived out in Brookside, and I was to hang out with them or Rockview. Like, I want to not be with these white kids. I was not that comfortable. So, but my mother's like, no, you got selected to be in the program. You're going to go. It was like we were special or something. I was like, no. But anyway, we go to this school and they had accepted one black kid in each grade. One black kid in each grade. This is like, what? Talk about segregation. So I had an afro at the time, because like it was the 60s. It was also the time that the Panther trials were happening. It was a lot of activity with the Black Panthers in New Haven. I always felt like, and I tell people this now, when I was growing up, it was the Black Panther Party for self-defense, and I felt like they were protecting our neighborhood. They had a breakfast program. They helped people with their homework. They were always like, it was like order when they came around. The drug addicts straightened up. Like, the people that you thought would be messing with you. Everybody straightened up. Between the Black Panthers and the Nation of Islam, I felt like they were our protectors. I didn't feel any kind of, it's just my experience. It's not, I don't know what everybody else's experience was, but my experience with them was not that. And then, both of my grandmothers were not, members of that organization of Black Panther Party, but they supported it, and they supported community and people that were doing things in community. So they sometimes were in meetings with them, and I don't know how I ended up with my grandmother Annie Huckabee, sometimes in meetings and doing stuff with her. I know she did a lot of community stuff, because I went to Ivy Street School initially, and she was a community liaison. And at that time, we went home for lunch. So sometimes at lunchtime, she would be bringing some groceries or some clothes to people's house. And she would say, you come with me. And yeah, I learned that from both of my grandmothers. But anyway.
So Bet, we're in the
school. My mother.
You're in the school.
So I'm in the school.
You're in the special
right.
Situation.
Special you're situation. The only? So I've always worn glasses since I was like 5 or 6.
You
so
had an afro.
I had an afro because right. I wanted to look like the women in the Black Panthers.
Okay.
Right? And so.
Shakur. Yeah, I got you.
Angela Davis mostly and Kathleen Cleaver, because I saw them.
Oh,
and then I sat in the front because I need to see. I sat in the front row. It was the first day of school. So the nun came in right away and said, that's not your seat. You're going to sit back there. So she put me in the back of the classroom. I was like, whoa. I had never been told that. Okay. I'm doing what I say. I'm in a new school. I'm in a new environment. I'm trying to be chill. You know, oh, and one of the things too, before she did that, the kids were saying they couldn't see over the cloud of my hair. So she was like, oh, so that's not going to be your seat. You're going to sit in the back. I go to the back of the room, the class. And we had all the old flip-top desks, right? So this young lady sits in front of me. This girl sits in front of me. She got long blonde hair. And she kept flipping her hair on my desk, flipping her hair on my desk. And I have to brush it off or flip my thing. And I got tired of it. I was like, can you stop? And she was like, no. I was like, okay. And in my 13-year-old self, because I'm seventh grade, I wanted to hit her, right? But I didn't. I told the nun, can I sit behind the boy? If I had to sit in the back of the room, there was a whole row that was empty. I think I might have just moved over or something and sat behind the boy because I was just like, I'm not going to deal with this. I'm going to move over. And then she said, why did you move? I said, because her hair is on my desk. I want to be over here. And she was like, no, get back over there. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do what the teacher says. Because my one thing that my mother did say is like, don't act up in school, you know. Okay, so sat back behind her. And I think I was about 2 months in at school. All this other stuff happened the first week. And also a lot of people who went to that school over the years had carved their initials in the desk. So I carved my initials in the desk. And the teacher made me stay in and sandpaper all the desks and take for like 2 weeks during recess. Right? It's like, oh my God. So I was getting all kinds of punished in this. I'm frustrated. So girl started doing it again with her hair. And one day I just got tired. I just pulled it and I cut it. Just pulled it, took one hand, like wrapped it around my hand, a chunk of her hair, not even all of it, just a chunk. And just a and she screamed. And I was like, I told you to stop. Like, I told you to stop. So they sent me to the mother superior's office. That was the principal, the mother superior. So I go to the principal's office. And back in those days, they could beat you. Mm-hmm. And they had like, she had like yardsticks rolled up and held together with some rubber bands. And she used to like tell people to bend over and hit them. And so I'm like, no, we're not doing this today. And we went all around her office until I was like, just call my mother. I don't want to be here anyway. You know, I'm trying to get away. And I got to the door and I opened the door and my grandfather was standing there. And I just went into his arms. I was like, Papa, get me out of here. And he told the lady, stop. She said, who are you? He was like, I'm her grandfather. Her mother's on the way. And we sat down in the hallway till my mother came. Lady was getting her desk, her, because I messed up. I flipped papers and everything. And then, then my mother came. My mother was just mad. Well, I told you not to act up in school and blah, blah, blah. My grandfather was like, just hush. She told you, because I had told I shared with my grandparents and my mother everything that had happened and told them I don't want to be there. He said, just hush. She don't want to be here anyway. So let's just get her whatever she got to get and let's go. Calm down. And my mother's like, well, I had to take time off work. My grandfather's like, go back to work. I got her till you get off. He said, but go get your brother. My mom's like, well, why I got to get him? She said, because if they're not treating her right up in here, they're not going to treat him right. You know, he came from Sharecropping, Georgia. He knew. He was like, he said, get yours out. Oh my God, I got to enroll them in another school. He's like, you work for the school system. Just go ahead.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. And the reason why I was looking forward to this conversation with Ife Gardeen was because of all the stories. We just got the moral of the story. Got to switch schools. Your mom work at the school system. So how hard could that really be?
Right. So, yeah. So,
but that's an example, though, of your parents advocating for you.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you've carried on throughout your whole life. I mean, to this day, you are a community organizer. You're advocating for those who don't even know they need advocating, which is at times difficult. As a question for you, how do you overcome that challenge of giving people something that they don't know that they need?
First, yeah, what I've come to understand is that you know how you ever hear somebody say, "Oh, I wish I could be like you. I wish I could be when I grow up. I want to be like that." It's like,
yeah, when I grow up, I want to be like Aoife. Yes,
yeah, and I'm like, but. And that's a compliment, yes. And what is it in you that isn't wonderful? Like, everybody's not here to do the same thing. And what I've also come to understand is that everyone is not prepared to sort of take a leap of faith. Or have the faith in themselves. Everybody got a place of where they are and what they could do. So it's not about, if everybody was the same, it'd be kind of a boring world. So what disappoints me sometimes is how people think it's a competition. Life is a competition or doing what I'm doing is threatening what they're doing instead of looking at it like collectively we're all making a better community where we are. And I have evolved to that because I did some things I used to take personally. And I don't anymore. It's just like, oh, it ain't personal because they're going to be envious or say whatever they want to say. Or come to a conclusion about somebody anyway. And they do it to a whole bunch of people. So I ain't the only one. yeah. It's just, I don't know. It took a lot of, I guess, listening and learning and evolving. Because some of the other things that I've done, so many jobs. You know, I've moved back to New York a few times from New Haven, back and forth, and because I wanted, I love culture, the African culture, African American culture, and literature, and I felt like there was a time I wasn't getting it enough here, and I learned a lot of that from going to Bowen Peters and from my family. Because like I said, my grandmother and two of my mother's sisters, her oldest sister and her youngest sister were teachers. So they introduced me to a lot of, and my mother read books, which, you know, was always like one of my, I have journals from my lifetime that I think my mother had thrown away when I went to college or something. And I was regretting that because I was like, I got stories in there.
Now you got a nonprofit organization.
Culturally Lit.
Culturally Lit.
With a K.
Culturally Lit with a K.
And the Lit is for literature, literary artists, and literacy.
Okay. You got an event coming up.
The event is coming up Saturday, October 4th at Concat and at 5 Science Park. Yep. It is our 6th annual Lit Fest. And I started it when I moved back here 6 years ago to care for my mom, who had dementia, because I was living in New York. And so I was like approaching my 60th birthday, and I was like, I'm not interviewing for nobody. I don't want nobody that's 35 or 40 ask me, what am I doing in 5 years, you know how them interview questions. I'm not doing that. And so I did work for Yale, the plantation of Yale, for a little while. And then, like, part-time. And then I started Lit Fest. And it just got bigger and bigger every year. There, first year was COVID year, 2020. So we had to pivot and do a virtual festival for 2 days. We did. And then the following years, we've been outside. And I appreciate, and I started it because in my lifetime, I worked for mostly all the arts organizations in this city. I worked for the Schubert Corporation. Well, before the Schubert was an international corporation and was a New Haven nonprofit in and of itself. I worked for the Schubert as a community liaison. I worked at Long Wharf Theater as a house manager, and also did community, bringing people in. I did a jazz series. When they were on Long Wharf, I did a jazz series after dark, after hours. We did, I did a Kwanzaa. Phew, Kwanzaa celebration was with all performances from all New Haven public school kids. They were big. I worked for the Arts Council. I worked for the first years of Arts and Ideas in various different capacities. So I was very familiar with kind of the world of the arts because I was always interested. It was something that I was always involved in. And my family, a couple people in my family always say, oh.
Okay.
A couple people and my family were like, they always knew I knew about a program somewhere.
What can people expect from
Lit Fest?
Yes. So, bringing you right back. See, I
got it. Yeah, you got it, because I'll be all over the place.
But the problem is that your cup runneth over. I mean, so it's
sometimes
expected.
I think it's ADHD.
The problem is we only got 30 minutes and okay. You got so much information. But what can someone expect from Lit Fest?
Okay, from Lit Fest, we have activities for young and old, workshops on writing, and creative workshops for adults. We have a lot for kids to do. I don't know if you heard of Third Space Gaming. They're going to have a game room. That's for everybody, all kinds of stuff. We're going to have live entertainment. Stout, who is a New Haven-based singer, is going to be performing. And we'll have some other performances outside. We're going to have vendors. We're going to have a keynote speaker, who is Dr. Michael Vincent Williams. He's a specialist on Medgar Evers, because this year the theme is it's the year of X. We're commemorating 100th year birthday of Malcolm X and Medgar Evers. And it's important because their work in human rights and civil rights is very significant now. In this political time that we're in, and with midterms coming up, I really wanted people to know, because Medgar Evers was a field officer for the NAACP in Mississippi in the 60s, registering people to vote. That is why he lost his life. And it's just a very significant thing in this time.
They poured into you. Now you're pouring into your community. Culturally Lit. Please step out. How can they get in? Where's the hub, the website?
We have a website, culturallylit.org, and it's culturally with a K, culturallylit.org, and on social media on all the platforms.
Culturally Lit.
Culturally Lit. KULTURALLYLIT.org. And Culturally Lit on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm beginning to do Twitter.
No comment. With that said, We got a few minutes, and I normally give the floor to anyone you want to thank, anyone you want to acknowledge. I mean, there's about 500 Huckabees out there. So I don't. You can pick and choose to just blanket everyone and just say thank you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity you gave me to be on, because I couldn't. This is my second time being on YBC, and let's see. My family, of course, they're like a collective. My family's a collective, so overall, they all feed into me, and we get together and play spades or get at somebody's house and just eat and drink and be merry. So I'm grateful for all of it. And I'm especially, I always, my grandmothers, because I was their oldest grandchild. My mother was significant in my life, and my grandmothers just both, because I was their oldest grandchild, poured a lot into me. And I believe because I was a female as well, because I got time with them that, and I pull on their wisdom and knowledge a lot in my life. And now I'm about to be 66 and thinking, oh, shoot, this is what they was talking about.
Let me tell you something. You have been listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Canelario. This has been a conversation with Ife Gardine. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And with that said, in the general audience, like always, thank you for listening.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.